Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. We bring you hand-selected hosts, podcasts, and talk radio programming with listening options, 24/7 streaming or listen on demand. We also feature one-on-one segments with important guests, people who have something to say that you need to hear. And if you have something to say and would like to be featured on the network, please visit speakuptalkradio.com for all of the details or contact us at pr@speakuptalkradio.com. Well, right now, I am honored to have returning author Greg Dodd with us to share his most recent book titled The Gills Creek Five. Now, we spoke about a year ago and shared his debut novel, A Seed for the Harvest, which won a silver medal for Christian fiction in the 2015 Illumination Book Awards. His other published works include contributions to the anthologies Precious, Precocious Moments, and Birds of Passage. And I'm excited to find out what he's been up to this past year, so let's get going. Welcome back, Greg.
Well, thanks, Pat. It's good to be back. It's nice talking to you again.
It's really good talking with you as well. So, other than writing, what have you been up to this past year?
Oh, other than writing?
tricky question.
Yeah, you threw me there. But well, it's been a busy year work-wise, but it's also been kind of ups and downs. I lost my mother back in May, and my father is in a nursing home. So we've had some you know, the trials of life, the ups and downs to deal with. But those are expected sometimes, and fortunately, you know, my mom's in a better place, and it's just one of those things we've had to struggle through. But it's been a good year. I've had some good ideas come to mind for some new works that I'm looking forward to getting out there in print one day.
Well, good. And I'm sorry to hear about your mom.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I know that's not easy. My mom actually passed away last August. In a couple of weeks, it'll be exactly 1 year. And so I understand that transition is really difficult, isn't it?
It is, you know, and it's funny because it's, you know, if you're close to it like you were, there's the emotional part of losing your parent, but then there's all the business stuff that comes after that, where you're really having to take care of all the loose ends after someone passes away. It's been a learning experience for me, but it's just like I said, part of life, and I'm happy to be in a position where I can do that for them. So
no, I get that, and also going through old things, I find myself looking at old letters and every Christmas card she saved that I sent her, and she even had my old teeth. My baby teeth. And so, yeah, it's been a walk down memory lane. And so it's very, very emotional.
It's amazing what your parents save. You know?
I know. I'm like, I opened this beautiful purse of her and there were my baby teeth. I'm like, okay, this lady is crazy.
I have my mom's cedar chest. It's full of things like that. So I know exactly what you mean.
Well, we'll get through this next year together with this.
That's right.
I get it. All right. Well, now we're going to get serious. We're going to talk about your newest book, The Gills Creek Five. It's a stage play format. So before we get into the actual content of the book, why a play?
That's a great question. And it's really one that I gravitated to naturally because it's the focus of the idea was really just pure dialogue. And I didn't want to kind of insert my own voice as a narrator or do a lot of scene setting because when you're reading dialogue, to me, there's a rhythm to it, and particularly I was wanting it to be comical, and humor is all about timing, and I didn't want any type of narrative to interrupt that, so I felt like the stage play format was best suited for it, where you're pretty much just reading a conversation between five people, and you really start to feel how it flows and the thought processes around what people are expressing, and it just seemed to work, and it's funny, too, because I was able, as I wrote it, I was literally imagining this happening on a stage. So I put myself in the audience and was watching it and was saying, you know, is this going to work? You know, will this play on a stage? And it helped me make it kind of real to where I think if it was ever produced, which I seriously doubt that it would, but it just makes it where you can visualize in your mind these five men sitting in chairs in front of you having this humorous conversation.
Mm-hmm. And as I read it, Greg, when I got done, I actually felt like I had seen it. Felt like
wow.
I was at a play.
Well, you know, I've had two other people say pretty much the same thing. They said I felt like I was there in the conversation. You know, like they were a part of it.
Yep.
And that's really what I was hoping for. It just kind of sucks you in a little bit, and then hopefully you kind of get to experience what it's like to be with those five people.
Absolutely. Well, I did, and you did an excellent job. So congratulations. Yeah. So for those who haven't read it yet, just give us a little synopsis.
Well, it started out as kind of a personal joke, to be honest with you, because you mentioned my first novel, A Seed for the Harvest, and last summer I put out a promotion for book club pricing. So if you had a book club and wanted to purchase a volume, a certain number, I would offer a discount. And my mind started playing around with the idea. Actually, after you and I talked last summer when I was at the beach, I had the opportunity to kind of roll this idea around in my head. And, you know, what would those book club discussions be like? If they had my book and I'm not there, what would they be talking about and what would they say? So I had some fun with that, you know, kind of poking a little fun at myself, as an author. But when I developed the backstory for each of the characters and started to get a feel for who they were and then put them all in one room, what kind of happened was surprising to me, because the story had very little to do with them talking about my book. It was about their lives, and the stories of their lives started to come out, and that became the play, which was kind of, again, kind of an out-of-body experience for me to kind of see this happen, which wasn't my original intent. I really wanted to get them into a discussion about my book, but their stories kind of took over, and I think what you see is a result of that. So,
don't you love how things evolve? I love that.
Yeah. Like I said, sometimes you're just watching things happen. Mm-hmm. I feel like it was just kind of something I was observing, kind of like you were. Mm-hmm. I was the one just kind of watching it happen as it unfolded. So.
Some of the best things happen very organically, don't they?
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So they seem more genuine that way, I believe.
I agree with you. Now, we talked about your characters. Where or how did you come up with them?
Without revealing my sources, you know, I took some liberties with some of my favorite types of characters that I've either read about or in stories or movies or even television, and developed some kind of amalgams of combinations of character traits that I find interesting or humorous. And I tried to make them, you know, dealing with five different people, I wanted them to be as uniquely identifiable as possible, so where when you're reading the dialogue, you don't have to keep looking at the name to see who's talking. You can identify who's speaking based on what the character's saying. And so they had to be different enough to where the reader could really could do that. So I've always been a fan of British humor and British characters. So, of course, I had to make one of my characters one from London. He was a British veterinarian, and my son is 25 or so, so I had to mix in the millennial character, the 20-something, to kind of even things out a little bit. And then in the center of all these characters, there's the group leader. And if you've ever been in a small group discussion, usually you find less about the leader, the person who's leading the discussion, than anybody else. They're kind of the cog in the middle of the wheel, so to speak, around which everything revolves. So that was a little easier. I didn't have to put as much visible effort into his backstory, although he does have one, which comes out a little bit. But it's the other characters in the story that kind of revolve around him. And one is an ex-pastor, which immediately the word ex-pastor intones some sort of mystery, like, why is he an ex-pastor? So I let that kind of evolve as well. And but each of the characters in the story are kind of working through a transition in their lives. And the most interesting, unique character that I really enjoyed writing for was Martin. Mm-hmm. And he is a someone who stumbles upon the group thinking it's an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. Mm-hmm. And didn't want to go there anyway, so he found this other group and decides to stay. And he has a very cynical, sarcastic approach to life, and he's kind of the catalyst for a lot of the more entertaining humor. So it's just kind of, how can I find different characters, throw them all in one spot, and then have the story kind of tell itself? And that's kind of the approach I took.
Love this. And your characters, did they conform to your initial hopes for them, or did they take off on their own?
So I actually spent a lot of time before I actually started writing the dialogue of writing literally the backstory for each character. So each character had their own history, their own issues, their own weaknesses and strengths, so to speak, the burdens they carried into discussions. And also within that, I developed a story arc. In other words, I knew there were going to be three acts in the play and three scenes per act. So there has to be a pretty even story arc of how you reach some, you know, initial introduction, the conflict, and the resolution. Well, how does that develop for each character, and how do you mix that into pure dialogue across those nine chapters? So I had to plan that out pretty strategically so it would all work. So I kind of knew how it would progress and pace. And but then once they started talking, sometimes all that changed, right? I mean, the dialogue kind of takes its own direction sometimes. But it was pretty well scripted. I had in mind what I wanted to do, and I think it was able to come together pretty well.
Wow, so it was almost like five books ahead of the book.
Yeah, it really was. And that's something, you know, I think when I talked last year, being a new writer, you kind of learn as you go. You know, after you've written your first book, you've taught yourself how to write, so to speak. So I took a lot of what I learned previously about writing and what I've read about and really tried to apply a method to this book and see what kind of results I could get from it. And it really paid off. It made it easier for me. I wasn't making things up as I went along, so to speak. I was literally following a plan of path of character development and story arc for each one of them, and they just kind of interwoven themselves together. So
you never had any background in writing a play.
It was quite a departure, and I've actually wondered, you know, if people read both books, they may have to look at the cover to see if the same person wrote both books, because it was a departure, both in structure and in tone and style. It was very different from my first book, but I do enjoy reading plays. The original, one of my inspirations for this work was the play 12 Angry Men. I don't know if you ever saw the film adaptation of that from 1957, I believe, but it's really just 12 men and a jury who are in a room together arguing for about an hour and a half. And the story that's being told just through pure dialogue is so gripping. I thought, what if I did that with humor? What if I made that situation funny to where it was entertaining to watch in a different kind of way, but still told a meaningful story throughout? So that was something that I really was inspired by and led to the decision to write it as a play.
So how was it for you to write dialogue? Did it just flow? Was it easy?
Well, it's actually one of my favorite things to do. When I was writing my first novel, a lot of my chapters started as the dialogue, and then I let things develop around it. I would go in back through it and then add, you know, scene setting and descriptions and, you know, all those kind of things to fill it out. But I really, my heart is around just the dialogue between people. I think that's really the interesting part of interacting with people is just how we express ourselves. And the different way we express ourselves, and sometimes how we don't really connect the ways we think we do. In other words, I might say something and it goes right over your head, or you take it totally different. And what I tried to have is kind of a comical take on that. You know, when people aren't really getting each other, it can be kind of funny. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the jokes I kind of had throughout the play, was just the parsed dialogue and how sometimes we all either get each other or don't, or how it all plays out. Mm-hmm. I really enjoy that part of it.
I think you did a great job. I want to read a little section that when I got to it, I laughed out loud. You talked about a few moments ago about Martin, the one character who came to the Alcoholics Anonymous meeting erroneously, and then Sam, the veterinarian. And so I'm going to read this. So Martin says, "Now, Sam, here's what you're going to do. Tomorrow morning, you're going to call Hannah." Sam says, "I am." "Yes, you're going to call her and ask her if she would like to go with you to the hairball." Sam says, "Furball." Martin said, "Same thing, call her." And that I just said out loud, I just started laughing, because once you read the book, you'll realize that Sam starts off, the veterinarian, talking about this cat's paw that he took care of, and he's talking about this cat, and so Martin talks about a hairball. I just thought that was so funny.
I'm glad you enjoyed it. And there were times when I was writing it where I was the one laughing out loud as I was writing it, because, like I said, I was just enjoying the characters and their interaction, and hopefully the readers will have the same take on it.
But, good. It was a good one. So,
well, good.
Yeah, I appreciated that. So what is your hope for this book? What did you want your readers to come away with?
Well, one, it does have a spiritual tone to it. I mean, certainly they're in a men's group, and they're reading in a meeting in a church. But I want it to be something where, you know, it can be enjoyed just for the pure humor aspect of it, for the human interest story of it. It's okay to have spiritual conversations that are disagreeable or funny or, you know, conflicting, and just to make it real, to let people experience what I think is a very real, honest conversation between five very different people within a spiritual Christian context, and how that can be enjoyable. One of the best comments I got was, you know, you don't have to be of any religious persuasion at all to enjoy this book. And that really is kind of what I'm after. And if someone takes some spiritual meaning from it and it means something to them, all the better. But one of the biggest compliments I've received, it's the book is a finalist in two book awards. One, the CEPA, the Colorado Independent Publishers Association Evie Awards, it was nominated as a finalist for the humor category. Mm-hmm. Doesn't have anything to do with religion. It's just pure humor, and it's competing with books on politics and some fantasy, science fiction fantasy things. So I think they got it. You know, it doesn't have to be about religion. It can be funny on its own. But then there again, there is something that is deeply spiritual to it. And the Red City Review folks, their awards program nominated for an award for the spiritual Christian category. So they're hitting both sides of it, and I'm happy about that. So that's kind of what I hope people take away, is that just an enjoyable story that does have some depth to it. It's not all funny.
Right.
There are some serious issues discussed in it.
Now, I think you were extremely successful, and the fact that you have won these awards and nominated for these awards, obviously attests to that. So really, really job well done.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you saying that, Pat.
You are welcome. So what's next for you?
Well, I do have a story that I'm developing right now. It's again, very different from my first two, which I kind of enjoy taking on different types of projects, not the same thing. This is a story that will be told in first person, which I've never done before, but I'm kind of borrowing on some works I've read by John Irving that I find very interesting, and trying to adapt my style to that kind of first-person narrative story. And I won't share any more, because next year we can talk about it, perhaps. and I'll tell you how that went. But it is something I'm looking forward to developing more fully.
Well, you know what I appreciate about you, Greg, is that you stretch yourself as a person and as a writer, instead of sticking to the first book that you wrote and said, okay, this worked for me. So we can look forward to this third and completely different offering of yours.
Yeah, we'll just have to make it an annual thing.
We will. You just keep writing.
There you go.
All right. Well, then, is there anything we missed that you would like to talk about today?
Well, I would just ask folks if they would just visit my website, gregmdodd.com. I put updates on there about what's going on with my works, and you know, obviously news about any awards that may be coming. And also, it's just a way to give you easy access to where my books are available. I also have a short story that I published recently that's available on Amazon called Letters from Damascus. That it's a very quick read, 26 pages, but again, it's very different than anything I've ever done. So it's just a quick way to keep tabs on me and follow me on social media as well, on Twitter and Facebook as well.
All right, excellent. So the name of the book is The Gills Creek 5, and it can be found at gregmdodd.com, and Dodd, D-O-D-D, gregmdodd.com. Greg, how exciting to have you back. I was so looking forward to sharing you again with our listeners, and keep writing, and we will talk to you again next year.
Thanks, Pat. It's always great talking with you.